Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome to Rock Sport Radio. It's Tuesday night. I'm Maureen McGonigal and this is Let's Hear It for the Girls. Tonight in the studio we've got Christina McKenzie, who is a Swimming Development Officer for Falkirk Community Trust. So welcome, Christina.
Hi there.
So we've got loads to get through tonight, from swimming to cycling, from Stornoway to Boston. Loads of stories, so let's crack on with this week's roundup and all things women in sport. So hopefully you'll join me, Christina. Just pipe up when you feel you feel the need. I'm going to start off with para canoeing racing. I'm tweeting that 3 years ago from taking my first steps post-amputation, Hope Gordon smashed the World Para Canoe Championships and landed herself a fifth in the world. So we'll be having Hope on the show later next month and we're going to hear more about her story, which is quite fascinating. But there's a wee tweet from Hope saying, tough race today, but I'm loving this journey and excited to get back training to keep making the boat go faster. And there's a hashtag Project 9. There's a hashtag which I read and read and read, thought it said no limits. And now I'm reading it, it says no limbits. And then, of course, hashtag succeed is one. So well done, Hope. On to athletics. And at the Muller British Championships, it was a gold medal for Kirsty Law in the discus. And I was also delighted to hear that Eilish McCogan won the British 5K title by almost 100 metres in 15.21.38 seconds at the weekend. And in her own words, punch my ticket for Doha. Jemmy Rica got second in the 1500 metres, booking her ticket to the World Championships, along with Beth Dobin, who also landed silver in the 200 metres final. Zoe Clark stated that after what had definitely been her most challenging athletics year to date, she was over the moon to get a bronze in the 400 metre. Now, I say it every week, but athletics is absolutely running ahead. You know, they're just doing so well. Any idea why?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've just been following Eilish McColgan there as well, and it's just so great to see that, you know, that she's coming through and she's getting the results now with all the work that she's putting in. It's evident from that.
She had so many setbacks, didn't she? And I think it was just last week or the week before, she was having to defend herself against someone who tweeted the fact that she was far too thin. Yeah. Did you read that?
I did, yeah. And
what was your thoughts on
that? It's such a shame that people are concentrating or focusing on these kind of negative things when, you know, you see the amount of work that these athletes, these girls put in, and it's the negative vibes that you get back from that. I mean, it's a minority, but, you know, that can affect an athlete and their mindset, but you can see the strength in that. They just overcome these silly minorities.
And the other thing is, when you look at her mum, she's the same build, yep, and possibly the kind of same size when she was racing, so it's not like post athletics. No. You know, that her body shape's changed. It's just the way she is. But, you know, what is this preoccupation with commenting on someone, how someone looks? It's just crazy, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you get it from both extremes, you know, you're either too skinny or too big. Mm-hmm. But certainly for Eilish, I mean, that's the field that she's in. You know, that's the kind of the body shape that she needs. And same, like you said, with her mother. So she's, well, in my opinion, she's blessed to have that kind of, that the genes, good genes in there that she can sort of, and to help her perform where she wants to.
And I think her mum was there on the day, which must have made it so special.
Fantastic, yeah.
Her mum, I think, is in Dubai or somewhere like this. Mm-hmm. So not always close by for her.
Yeah,
so,
great motivation for her as well.
Fabulous. Now, I just wanted to be shout out to pickleball for those that that know what pickleball is, because it's quite a new sport in the country and you weren't really aware of it yourself, right?
No, apologies, I wasn't, but really intrigued by it. And like I said, I'm going to have to look it up when I go back.
Well, you know, that's maybe their selling point,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is
but
fantastic.
It's great to see how they're coming on and they continue to expand their sport. And last weekend added another 9 qualified coaches, 6 of them female, who all passed their International Pickleball Teaching Professional Association Teach the Teacher workshop. I don't know why I put these things down in paper, because Christina, my tongue just can't get rid of them. You know, I do it to myself.
It's a tongue twister.
I do it to myself. And cricket, so we've been speaking about this for a long while, but it's coming very soon. It's just around the corner. In fact, this weekend, the 31st of August to the 7th of September, is the Cricket Scotland will host the ICC Women's T20 World Cup qualifier in Dundee and Angus. The eight teams will be competing for two remaining spots at the ICC Women's T20 World Cup in Australia in February, March 2020. So there's no excuse not to go along because it's free entry for all. So go along and support the Wildcats. Their first match is Scotland versus USA at Forfarshire Cricket Club, Friday the 31st at 2 p.m. And currently, when we're talking about cricket, they're on the lookout for a women and girls participation manager to help inspire Scotland to choose cricket. So there's more info on the Cricket Scotland website, so please go along there. On to golf now, Christina, which is the big tournament which we'll all be waiting for. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit about Carly Booth, who recorded her third win on the LET Golf Tour with a win at the Czech Ladies Open this weekend. And she's actually Scottish Golf Women and Girls Ambassador. But it's the Solheim Cup that we're going to have a little chat about, because there's a lot of positive interest surrounding women in golf with the Solheim Cup just weeks away. And the Scottish Government hope that the 2019 Solheim Cup will be the biggest ever European edition of that event and the most family-focused golf event in history, with around 100,000 spectators expected at Glen Eagles and a host of activities for families and young people inside. I just can't get over that number.
Yeah, it's massive. It's huge. Yeah.
I mean, you think, well, OK, there'll be loads of people from Scotland, but there'll be absolutely loads flying in Edinburgh, Glasgow. And I know the last time I came through Glasgow Airport, it was all branded.
That's right, yeah, you see it everywhere now.
Have you been there recently?
I have, yeah, and it's just amazing to see all the publicity for that, and hopefully that'll sort of get people interested, get people come to spectate.
I think they've worked hard, you know, even I think in some of the television, they'll talk about it being sponsored by the Solheim Cup, so they've done a lot to bring it to the attention of the public.
Yep.
But I suppose it's not just about the tournament itself. It's about that word that we always talk about, the legacy.
Yeah.
You know, because golf is struggling in terms of day-to-day membership for women. I think they're looking at about 14% as being the number of women members they've got. But they're doing a lot of good work. The RNA are putting a lot of work in. Do you think big tournaments like that do inspire people to take up the sport?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's even like, for example, there, Wimbledon, you know, come summer months there, when you see Wimbledon on the telly, then you see all the tennis courts, they're all full with people, you know, youngsters. They want to sort of, they see it, they want to be, you know, the next Andy Murray's, the next top tennis players. So I think it's the same with all the sports, and hopefully there with the golf there as well. If it gets good coverage there, you know, that people will take it up, you know, if they're even just at sort of grassroots levels there or want to develop further into it. I think it's all positive that you can take from that.
I think they've been running a lot of ambassador events. They created a lot of ambassadors within golf, and they're having a lot of events for women and girls and for young boys as well, to get them interested in the sport. And I think it's, for me, it's something that families can do. You know, like, I think of my son and my grandson. My son loves golf, and this year he's going to be giving some lessons to his son. He probably needs to give some lessons to his mother, who doesn't have a clue, but that's another story. But it is a kind of family event. You could see mum and dad, two kids going out and playing. I think, for me, one of the drawbacks is the cost.
Yeah,
it can be quite expensive to be a member of a golf club. Have you ever played golf?
I did a little bit when I was in Florida. I figured it was the kind of the perfect place while I was in Florida. And
you should be pickleballing at that point.
That's I don't think that was the point at that point, was it? Yeah. But I think, well, from my kind of mindset, I probably don't have the patience for it, or probably even the skill for golf. I think, you know, when I see the people there that are training all hard, you know, the admiration I have for them, that, you know, I think it's a frustrating sport. You know, you can have good days and you can have bad days, but I think, you know, you need to be really focused, really work hard on that. And there's so on, obviously, the technique as well.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a sport you do have to work at. Mm-hmm. You don't just suddenly pick it up.
Yeah.
You consistently make your game better and better, and that does take some sort of commitment.
But the same with, like, you know, the cost as well with golf and all the other sports there. You know, you've got your equipment, but then you've also got your membership fees as well on that. But like you say, I mean, it is a good opportunity. It's a good family event there. You know, you can all take your rounds of golf, have lunch, and make it a social day out, really.
We like our wee social days out. Have lunch, have cake.
Absolutely.
Have a cup of tea. So we're going on to football now. The UEFA Women's Euro 2021 qualifiers will kick off this Friday, Easter Road, when Scotland meets Cyprus with a 7:35 kick-off. Shelley Kerr has named her squad for Scotland's women's first match since the FIFA World Cup debut, with Lana Cleland and Christy Murray ruled out through injury. And there's six inclusions, right enough. Rachel McLaughlin, Lucy Graham, Sam Kerr, Abby Grant, Abby Harrison and Zoe Ness are all called up into the squad. I did notice a wee tweet from, I can't remember whose mother it was, but proud as punch, and it's great to see the mothers get behind the daughters.
Absolutely, it is. It's fantastic.
It's fab and so exciting. You know, we were so near with our opportunities at the World Cup, mm-hmm. So it's nice to think that it's just around the corner. And again, good luck to them, because the team are now aiming to qualify for their third consecutive tournament. So that would be the Europeans in Amsterdam in Holland, followed by France and the Worlds. Yep. And again, the thing is, the finals for this is going to be in England.
We have to be there.
And I find this interesting, Christina, given your background, and we haven't actually spoken about your place of birth being the Isle of Lewis. Was it Stornoway?
Stornoway itself.
But at the domestic end of the game for football, it was the end of the road for the Lewis and Harris women's football team at the weekend as they participated and won. And I think you're telling me 7-0?
7-0 was the final result, yeah.
The Scottish Women's Football Highlands and Islands League Cup against Clannacudden at the Tulloch Caledonian Stadium in Inverness. However, they have resigned from the league due to finance, travel and lack of players. It must be a major issue.
Yeah, I mean, reading that and seeing that, it's a double-edged sword, because it's so exciting that they've won it. You know, that's a real high and it was a fantastic result. And, you know, the team have worked so hard. You know, Ewan and Catherine have done a really good job with the team. But then to hear that they have to resign from the league because, you know, with the finances and the travel, it's heartbreaking because, you know, there's girls there that are just so passionate. We travelled with them in the Island Games in Gotland, and you can see they're so keen, they just want to get out on the pitch, they want to play. But when you've got these kind of restrictions there and they can't get funding, sponsorship's a really difficult issue with them as well.
I mean, I also think the other side of the coin is, when you go into league, which I thought was great that they created the league, which meant that the distance travelled wasn't going to be that far.
Yeah.
But we forget that, you know, you might be up north, but if you're out in the islands, it is still another bit of a journey. And to have to do that on a regular basis, because teams will only come to you once, you've got to come off the island. Yeah. To play your other games more than once. And I think also there was a lot of girls going to college. Mm-hmm. But what I did read was, because of the fact that it was so difficult, they had a concession to allow the girls to play a little bit older against the boys. And in fact, because of that, they're actually very good at football. And it's like, as you said before, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, how do you win?
Yeah. But, you know, when you see that, there's obviously it's from Stornoway they go, but you've also got girls, you know, from the Southern Isles as well, that they need to come to Stornoway as well, and then obviously getting to Ullapool or whatever they need to go. So it's the time as well, you know, and some of them are going to university and school.
What would the typical time be like to get sort of the furthest point in the islands onto the mainland up at Ullapool, say?
I think there's girls there from Ness that have to come down to Stornoway, and then if you're getting the ferry there from 6-7 o'clock in the morning, then the ferry in itself, by the time you get on, and it could be up to 3 hours by the time you get off. That's just to Ullapool. And if you want to go the night before, you know, that's obviously another day as well, and then it's accommodation to spend in the night there as well. So it's ideally, the preparation wise, you'd want to be there 24 hours before, and then also when they finish the match as well, it's basically straight back onto a bus and then onto a ferry again, and then
back to Stornoway.
It's tough for the girls, it really is, but it's real
sorry to hear it. You just don't know, you just don't have a resolution to how you could make that better. Yeah. Tri-Sports. Now, this is a new initiative from the Girl Guides, which will kick off early in 2020. But at this moment in time, they're looking for partnerships. And this is a great opportunity. And it's not to be missed if you're looking to recruit new members to your sport. They're on the lookout for partners to join them in projects that will encourage their members from Rainbows to Rangers. And I think that might be kind of age 4, 5 plus.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I'm not
Start
really
them young.
Sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
to get involved in a new sport, so no matter age, ability or background. So, you know, if you're a sport out there that's looking to get more girls into your sport, why not partner up with Girl Guides, and you'll find more information on their website. Now we're talking, Christina, we're on to cycling. And Keddy McPhee, and you're telling me that you're actually flatmate with Keddy.
I am indeed, yeah.
We speak about her often because she always brightens the day with her tweets.
Uh-huh.
She just has this little knack of putting down exactly what people want to hear, because actually her tweets cheer people up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But in her own inimitable way, she said it was an ace wee morning racing the team time trial Scottish champs with the very lovely Stirling Bike Club gals, and we bagged a bronze medal. Woohoo! I've never done TTT before, but actually love being a part of the team. Well, and that team is?
I'm quite glad you said that, because that's my team.
And she's my roommate. And she didn't, there'd be trouble. Gosh, could you imagine me sitting here saying that she said, whoa, this was terrible, don't like it.
Absolutely,
and that's where that roommate of
mine. No, that was great. It was actually good that we actually persuaded her. But in fact, actually in 2013, Keddy and I rode time trial in Bermuda at the Island Games.
Oh,
it was awful. It was horrific. It was like 25 degrees, fabulous blue skies, wow, lovely beaches. But that was both our first time that we had ever done a time trial before. And we were fortunate enough, we got a team bronze medal in it.
Oh, brilliant.
But obviously Keddy's concentrated on her mountain biking and cross, and she's obviously done fantastic with the Scottish and the British series there, and at the World Cup events as well. She's just doing phenomenal, the series there. But also with her training, that she does a lot of road cycling as well. So obviously me knowing this, and we were looking to get, we've a team of three, it's four team for the team time trials, so we're looking to get a strong team as possible. So a wee bit of persuasion, and she was happy to come out with us. We did a few training sessions there. She enjoyed it, so it was
crappy. What's the kind of difference? What do you have to do differently? You know, you would think, being a novice, you're on a bike.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not the case.
No, you have to work in formation with each other. So you have to figure out, so it's basically four people in a line, and then figuring out who's the best wheel to follow, because we've all got our strengths, we've all got our weaknesses. The race was over 40 miles. So some of our team are better at shorter events, some of them are at stronger events. So we need to kind of put the balance out there that the ones that are into the shorter events there, that they can last the distance there, and then the ones that are into the longer events, like myself, that we kind of go that wee bit faster than we would normally do. So we had to practice, you know, how long each person would stay on the front before the next one would come over. And then even simple things like with the wind direction, that we're changing over in the right direction, that into the wind, you know, to get the advantage.
A lot of technical thought goes into it.
There is, yeah. Because, like, even over that length of time, it's so technical. You know, you get all, whatever marginal gains help, because we were only 40 seconds behind second place. So, you know, if you think about 40 seconds over 40 miles, you know, there's a few things you think, oh, well, if you did this or you did that different, you know, what effects that would have.
Uh-huh.
But it was fun. It's a really good event there. It's really well organised, and, you know, it's great to catch up with all the other women that you see from one end of the year to the next.
And do you think it's something you'll be able to encourage Keddy to participate in again?
Oh, absolutely.
Has she got a choice?
No.
Well, still on cycling, and I was really delighted to read about the Women's Mountain Biking Festival that's going to be based in Aviemore from the 1st of September. They've said, come along and give mountain biking a go in a friendly, relaxed and safe environment. Sessions are designed for everyone from beginners to advanced riders. Build your confidence and meet other like-minded girls looking to have fun mountain biking in the beautiful Cairngorm National Park. If you don't have a bike yet, please let us know when booking, and we'll arrange one for you to borrow on the day. There's a huge screen, and it's on Eventbrite if you want to check it out. It's Ride Like a Girl. But they've thought of everything. Mm-hmm. It was really good because, you know, they've built a bit of fun into it. You know, they're telling you if you're a novice, you can come along. If you don't have a bike, don't let that stop
you. That's great there that they've got bikes so that you can borrow as well.
It's wonderful.
There is nothing to stop you.
Yeah, hopefully it will really appeal to a lot of young girls to go and give a go on the day. And some of us older ladies as well, you never
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely, there's no excuse yet.
Well, that's our roundup for this week. Thank you, Christina. And now, just before we go into a short break, let me say that if you have an event coming up that you'd like some publicity for, or some results that you feel people should hear about, or perhaps you would just like to come on to the to the studio, promote your sport and come on the show, contact me at any of the RockSport social media channels or directly at my own RockSport Twitter feed, and I'll spell this out to you. It's at Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, Rock, R-O-C-K, S-P-R-T. So come along. You know, don't complain you don't get any publicity for your sport, your club, whatever. This is an opportunity to be part of the roundup. Come on to the radio station and tell us all about it. So don't go away. Come back and listen to what Christina's got to tell us, because it's an absolutely fascinating story.
Thursdays at 8 p.m. F1, Rally, Formula E, Touring Cars and MotoGP. The motorsport season is well and truly underway, and RockSport Radio is already spinning wheels and burning rubber. Andy Alston and Adam Todd are on the starting grid every Thursday from 8 p.m. to bring you news and comment on Pole Position, a petrolhead's dream. Try a lap or two with the guys. Pole Position on RockSport Radio.
Have you ever lost money on an investment? If a high street bank persuaded you to buy a stocks and shares ISA, unit trust or investment bond and you lost money, Goodwin Barrett can help you get back thousands of pounds in compensation. Even if you don't have the investment anymore or the paperwork, Goodwin Barrett make it easy to find out. Text GOOD to 66777. That's GOOD to 66777. You don't need a claims management company to make a complaint, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
Do you hear that? That's your family coming round to your new house for Sunday lunch. Your son opening the door of his first home. Visitors arriving at your guest house. Friends coming over to watch the football. Scottish Building Society offer a range of mortgages, so we can turn this into this.
Love!
Scottish Building Society. We've been helping people open doors since 1848. Call us today on 0345 600 4085. Scottish Building Society is authorised by the Prudential Regulation Authority and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority and the Prudential Regulation Authority.
It's easy to put things off. I'll sort it tomorrow. It'll wait. Well, turns out if you're a man with prostate disease, the sooner you spot it, the better it can often be treated. So if your dad or brother have had prostate cancer, or you're having trouble with your waterworks, do something about it. See your GP or visit prostatescotland.org.uk for more information. Prostate Scotland. Pull your finger out.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
So welcome back to tonight's Let's Hear It for the Girls, to our guest Christina McKenzie, who is a swimming development officer for Falkirk Community Trust by day and in her spare time. Well, let's talk to Christina and see what she gets up to in her spare time. Firstly, you're from the lovely, lovely Isle of Lewis, Stornoway. Tell me what it was like growing up there and how many sports you got involved in as a young girl.
It was really good. It was a really good childhood. It was just what you remember is just running around and...
So much space.
Yeah, and it never getting dark.
Oh, goodness.
And, yeah, it was great because, you know, your parents would say, come in when it gets dark. You know, at 10 o'clock at night, it could still be daylight. And even when I go back up just now, it's amazing. You know, you could be out on your bike at 9, 10 o'clock and you still don't need lights on. Whereas, you know, when I'm back in Stirling there, you know, even the difference there with a couple of hours. But it was good. It was a good... I went to school there, the primary school and secondary school. I was into cross-country running and swimming. I was in the local swimming club. I didn't really do any cycling at that point, but it's more just like with the Stornoway Running Club and the Western Isles Amateur Swimming Club.
I mean, are the schools in Stornoway, are they keen on sport? Did they promote a lot of sport?
Bearing in mind it wasn't yesterday, that was in primary or secondary schools.
Just the day before.
Yeah, it wasn't hugely, you know, like when I look back, our swimming club or session, so it's 45 minutes a week, yeah. And you can't do anything in 45 minutes.
But let's be honest, I don't think they get swimming at all now in school.
No, they don't at all, and it's heartbreaking to see, and especially my job just now that I see the children there that can't swim. You know, I've got 11, 12-year-olds that are coming to classes there that they're in beginners, you know, with 4 or 5-year-olds, and they're embarrassed, you know, they don't want to be in with that, they don't want to be in that position, but for whatever reason, you know, whether it's schools.
Well, that's it, yeah. So tell me, when did you move to the mainland?
When I was 18 to go to college. So I moved there to Glasgow for a couple of years and studied sports coaching, sports development. So that was kind of more kind of coaching with sports rather than sort of participating. I still did a wee bit of running, but not so much. So I got my qualification there and then I actually moved back to Stornoway and started working there in the local sports centre, lifeguard and swim teaching.
Oh, that sounds interesting. But you have moved about. I mean, you've been to Glasgow, back to Stornoway, then you were to Dublin for a while?
That's right, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, after Stornoway, I moved back to Glasgow again, get some more of the city living. and I worked at Strathclyde University there in their PE department. But then I got an opportunity there to move to Dublin, where I was working as a aquatics development manager at the National Aquatic Centre. That was a new centre that just opened up.
Wow, in that must have been amazing.
2003, it was fantastic. Yeah. Within the first year of opening, that they held the European Short Course Championships there. So it was really great to see that kind of environment, you know, seeing that world level, the FINA level, and what you see on the telly and all the work that goes in behind that, you know, getting the pool all set up with the touchpads all the time and equipment. It's fantastic, but really good to be involved in that.
It's pretty fascinating, isn't it, when you delve into it, people just turn up to an event and look at the participants.
Yep.
And, you know, that's just the end result. It's the build-up beforehand that's always amazing.
It's unbelievable because, you know, when you look at just a basic pool and then, you know, the hours and the weeks and the days behind that goes into it is just, it's something else. You just don't expect that.
But that is your full-time job at the moment because you're with Falkirk Community Trust and that's your day job. It is swimming development.
Yep.
So give us a day. What do you do during the day?
It's basically organising all the swimming lessons within Falkirk, Grangemouth and the Bowness area. So we've got just over 2,000 children in that programme. So that programme, it's Scottish Swimming, that it's in conjunction with them, so it's part of their national framework. So in that we've got four levels. So we've got the main Learn to Swim programme from ages 5 to 12, but prior to that we have the adult and child and preschool. So it's really all about getting children swimming from 6 months, you know, getting them in young, getting them in with the parents there, and then getting them through our pathway so that they can move up to become, you know, the next Duncan Scott, which he's actually the ambassador for Scottish Swimming. So he comes along and he does open days with the kids and, you know, it's really good motivation for them.
He's a great lad and what an amazing achievement, you know.
That's fantastic,
To some reason you felt came out of the blue. I think he was just as surprised as everyone else was at times, the level of success he had a couple of years ago.
He was, and he's just getting stronger and stronger each year as well. And he's a really good role model as well for the children. You know, he's great. He comes in and interacts with them as well. And it's a really good partnership that with Scottish Swimming that they have. And it's just, well, obviously, their ethos is that every child can swim.
I know I worked with Alan Lynn a couple of years ago in the AILSA project, which I thought was fascinating. And I think this is, you know, bringing through what they hope will be their elite level and looking at the age group that sometimes has the most drop-off. And the great thing about that programme is they actually brought the girls together and asked them what they wanted. Sounds so simple, but, you know, so very rarely do we hear it happening. But you must enjoy your job swimming.
I do. I love it. I love that environment because, you know, it's a healthy environment. It's a sports environment. It's challenging at times, you know, because as you can imagine, with over 2,000 children and 8 venues, we've got about 45 swim teachers as well. So it's quite difficult logistically organising, make sure that all the swim teachers are in the right places. Managing the whole programme like that, and then obviously other development plans that are in place at the same time too, so it keeps me busy.
Keeps you busy, but you know there's other things that keep you busy as well. I don't know how you fit it all in. Have you got more hours in a day because you come from Stornoway?
I think it's lack of sleep.
Well, listen, you took up cycling in 2012 and you bought your first road bike to do triathlons. So given that swimming's your passion and we know that you love running, it wasn't really difficult to think you'd end up with triathlon.
Yeah, it was something that I always kind of played about with kind of thing on bikes, and but never kind of to any sort of competitive level. And it was only really by chance, because when I was doing my running, obviously the running, there's a hard impact on your body with all the joints there. And so my rest days, I would sort of, for my easier days, I would swim some more kind of low intensity and then cycling, and I just really enjoyed it. So from that basis, I thought, well, you know, I'll try. There's a sprint triathlon. So it's a short distance swim, short distance, 750 metre swim, 20k cycle and 5k run. So I thought, I'll give that a go, and did that. Well, the first one I did was actually on a mountain bike, and just really enjoyed it. And I think I probably got the bug from that. So that's when I bought the road bike for that, which I still have that. That road bike is now my winter bike, which has done me well. And then going from the sprint distance there up to the standard distance, middle distance, and then main target after that was to do the full Ironman distance. So it was like building up from it.
And it looks as if you have definitely built up, because, I mean, you're sort of breaking records. You broke the Veterans Time Trial Association record, just, what, 2018?
That's right, yeah. So that was 24 hours TT cycling. So that was down in England last year when they had the national championships.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, it covered 431 miles in the 24 hours.
So that it just kind of trips off your tongue, and you think, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. And you also set a new SVTTA record. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's the Scottish version. So it's Scottish Veterans Time Trials Association. So the veterans, it's over 40s.
Yeah, so you're a record breaker and a record holder.
So yeah, for the 12 and the 24 hours. Well, the 12-hour, that was 2 weeks after the 24-hour, so I was really pleased that I was sort of recovered enough and able to, it's 255 miles.
And you're doing all this plus working in a full-time job?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep, it's, you know, you have to be committed, you have to be dedicated. You know,
You need to be committed if you're asking me. Because there's more to come, isn't there?
Yeah.
Wow. So let's hear about the other thing, your love of running. And in fact, that took you to the US in 2013, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Which is, you know, a year that probably sticks out in the mind of a lot of people who run marathons, because it was the year of the Boston Marathon and you were actually there at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your day that led up to this event and how things went for you.
It was quite bizarre, really. I qualified for that marathon the year before, during the London Marathon. So, I mean, the Boston Marathon, it's a prestigious event. You know, it's one of these ones that if you run marathons, that's one of the ones to do. So to actually qualify for it, I mean, I thought it was too good an opportunity not to go. And I've got family in Boston, in Western Massachusetts. So a few phone calls, a few emails, I was able to go and stay with them. So I flew over and I stayed with my cousin over there. And it was a drive, it was probably about a 3-hour drive into Boston. So basically I'd got a hotel there for the night before. And then I got up at, I think it was 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock to go. But it's a really fascinating course because it's A to B, but you get shipped out to the start. So I came out of my hotel and you've got all these American yellow school buses. So they're just queued out there. So I got out early. So I wanted just to sort of savour the whole thing and just enjoy it. I was there on my own. Just got on the bus there and then just started talking to other people that were in the same situation. And then you get to, there's kind of like a picnic area there where you can get changed, and they've got so many stalls there, and there's obviously trying to, so many sales and marketing, you know, that they're trying to promote so many stuff.
They
and up
do
there.
It well, don't they?
They do. You know, the Americans, yes. Fantastic. You know, their Gatorades and...
Yes.
But what I found was quite funny was that, you know, they'd have so many like bagels, peanut butter, all this Nutella that they're trying to feed you. And I'm thinking, you know, I would love to, but I'm not going to eat all that and then run 26.2 miles. You know, I thought if they had it at the end, you know, that would be, could enjoy that more. But it was really good. It was just kind of soaked up the whole day and the weather was lovely. It was in April, so it was a nice kind of cool morning for it. So went up, lined up, and then the gun went off, so it was good. Everything was going to plan. It's quite nice. The first five miles, it feels like it's kind of more of a downhill, so you just kind of get warmed up, get into the rhythm of it. So I was going, I think my time from that before was 3 hours 30. That was my qualifying time, so I was aiming for anything below that. So thankfully everything went well, all nutrition, no issues, no injuries, no aches. Crossed the finishing line in 3:22.
Wow.
So passed through the finishing line, and they quickly kind of usher you along. They give you your blanket, give you your medal, your water, because obviously they don't want to congest up the finishing line there. So I went back to, I got my stuff there and my clothes, and then just walked back up to, well, when I say walk, probably limped back up to the hotel there, because in a bit of pain after that.
I think you're entitled to limp. I would really be crawling back up.
It was a slow walk, and then enjoying my free Gatorade and all my products from then afterwards. Got back to the hotel, and my plan was just to shower there, and I was driving back to my cousin's. So again, it was like a 3 hour drive back. Got back to the hotel, and then I was getting messages there from friends and saying, oh, you know, well done, and are you okay? Hope everything's fine. Are you okay? And I'm like, oh, they're really quite sort of worried about me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. Just, you know, my legs are a wee bit achy. But then within that 5 minutes, the police started just going crazy. Noises, sirens going off. And then obviously that's at that point there when we had knew that, well, nobody really knew at the time what was happening other than a bomb going off at the line, at the finishing line there. At that point, they had everything, it went down to lockdown. We weren't allowed to move out of the hotel. We had to stay put. Then obviously the TV screens were on and you were seeing what was happening. And it was quite bizarre and frightening to find that was just like 5-10 minutes down the road.
It'd be quite surreal, I would think. You know, you wouldn't be able to take it in, would you?
It was bizarre. It was just, you know, I went from like going, oh, delighted, you know, I've got my really good time there, really happy with that, to that just being completely irrelevant and knowing, you know, that there was people dead or that there was people with injuries and not knowing what was there or what was happening. And then the news coming through that you couldn't move because there was possibilities that there was more bombs. So it was the kind of uncertainty and not knowing. And then obviously my cousins in Western Mass at South Hadley, they were obviously worried about me. They didn't know what was happening or if I was caught up. And then my brother, my mother in Stornoway as well, obviously the first thing that they hear on the news, you know, a bomb going up in the Boston Marathon. So you can imagine. And obviously all my friends as well, that they knew that I was there. So obviously the fright that they got, you know, the messages that I was reading that afterwards, obviously it was just really quite a frightening opportunity.
Where social media is good, isn't it? You can reach so many people with one bit of information. So in terms of letting people know that you're safe.
Yeah, that was a great thing.
Yes.
Just put their peace of mind that, you know, that it was okay. And I was probably held back up in the hotel till about 8 o'clock that evening. So it was an awful long time because, you know, you've got yourself and then you've got other people there that, you know, you might sort of be sitting quietly, but there's other people that are going frantic and it's causing mayhem and it's causing you to be that feeling that bit distressed.
Well, and I don't think you can be observing that, albeit from the comfort of your hotel, without feeling something because you were involved in it. You know, it's understandable.
And then just thinking, you know, if I'd been, because I think it was like half an hour after I'd crossed the line.
Yeah.
You know, if I had got an injury, if I'd got a cramp or something, and you know, and I could have been a wee bit slower, you know, I could have been crossing that line there as well. Yeah. Just try not to think of the what ifs or the buts.
It's a sad day when things like that start impacting into sport, isn't it?
It is. It's really sad because, you know, it's amazing. It's a family day out. You know, it's a fantastic family. It's got so many people there celebrating, people running and the enjoyment.
Yeah.
And to be overshadowed by that, it's just horrific.
But it didn't stop you.
It didn't
stop you because undeterred later that year, in fact, you participated in your first Ironman, Ironman UK, and since then you've gone on to do 5 more, including the Keltman. Is that
That's
how they say it?
Correct, the Keltman.
Keltman,
yeah.
Just last year. Now, I read a little bit about this, and you know, this is a promotional information to encourage you to participate, and it said, centred around the stunning Torridon Mountains, we will take you on an adventure unlike any other. Make no mistake, when we say this race is extreme, we mean it. Read the race information carefully before entering, as you may have to endure cold water, strong winds, driving rain and difficult conditions on the mountains with low visibility. I take it that's true. Yeah?
It is.
And more.
When they say to encourage you, I'm not sure these are the exact words. And what they've missed out on that there when it says about the enduring the cold water. With that, you've got the jellyfish.
The jellyfish, I read that, yeah.
And that is a big thing. And I was a bit kind of nervous because it was a 5 o'clock start. It was going to be cold. And with all this jellyfish there, you're just, you can't even imagine. Because at the same time...
Oh, I can't.
No, I don't like to swim with gloves or with mitts on, or with actually booties. So I was aware that swimming with nothing like that on, that I could get stung or I could be feeling them. And, you know, it was a bit kind of nervous going into it.
But so you know did what? You do it without?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
But to be honest, I actually really enjoyed the swim and I got a really good time, better time than I actually anticipated, than I'd
That's
given myself
those jellyfish
for.
Were after you.
Getting away from the jellyfish. But at one point, you're swimming along and there's just, I don't even know what the term for. It's not a shoal, a shoal of jellyfish. It's not. Uh-huh. I don't know what the term is.
A wobble?
A lot. A lot of jellyfish in front of me and having to push my hand through. And
oh,
just
yuck.
Feeling like the jellyfish, the rubber off them, and it was just like, okay, just at this point, just keep my eyes closed and just sort of keep going through. But unfortunately, there was one lady that she got stung quite bad in her face.
Oh dear!
And obviously, it came up, was swollen up, and it was quite horrific. But it was a really lovely morning, to be honest, and it was just really there was calm. But then coming out to the water. The calmness went and we got the rain, we got the wind and we got all the extreme conditions that they promised.
Well, I'm glad that they actually kept their promise then. Goodness sake. So as well as that, you've been involved in the island games on quite a few occasions and this is something that all the sort of small islands get together and have it every year, I think, isn't it?
Every 2 years.
Yeah. And when was it? 2019
Gibraltar? It was in Gibraltar,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
But your participation was before that. Tell me a bit about that.
My first participation was in 2013 in Bermuda.
Yeah.
You know, it was a hard place to go. It was, you know, it was difficult.
Can you imagine swimming in there to swimming with a jellyfish?
Well, the funny thing was, when we did triathlon that I did in Bermuda, along with the cycling, the half marathon, the triathlon was on the first day and it was non-wetsuit. So normally, obviously, for the triathlons, it has to be, if it's a minimum of whatever temperature, you have to have a wetsuit. Now, generally, every triathlon I do, a wetsuit is compulsory because, you know, it's normally sort of 8-9 degrees at times like that. So this one was non-wetsuit. So it was quite funny actually swimming in the sea there without a wetsuit because a wetsuit gives you that extra buoyancy as well. But on the plus side, it's really good coming out the transition that you don't have to sort of strip out
of
your... Yeah, and that in itself is, you know, that's like another transition aid. That's another discipline, trying to get your wetsuit off in a quick time. But it was amazing. It was really good. I did that with Kerry as well. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, she won the triathlon there, but we ended up getting team gold as well. So it was a fantastic opportunity there, and then competing in the half marathon and the time trials there as well.
Well, not resting on your laurels at all. 2019 brought another challenge. Now, say it for me, the Lego...
The jog.
Lejog.
L-E-J-O-G.
L-O-G. Now, this is just crazy. This is just crazy. Explain to people who are listening in exactly what you were taking on. Or maybe before I do that, let me just say, you had a little tweet and all you said, Christina Mack will attempt to break the women's land end to John O'Groats' record in August 2019 with support from Stirling, BC and coaching from Team Joe Barr. That doesn't say an awful lot, but there's an awful lot to talk about at this particular challenge that you did.
Yeah, so Le Jog is, which I know if you're not into cycling, you probably wouldn't really know that term. It's Land's End to John O'Groats. And then Le Jog Mac came from that, and obviously Mac and McKenzie. So that's what we've kind of been known as really for the last year. So it's basically cycling from Land's End to John O'Groats, which is a total of 839 miles.
Wow.
And the record for that is 52 hours, 45 minutes. And that was set in 2002 by Lynn Taylor. So that was my target.
17 years ago, and you just thought, yeah. I'm going to break this. It stood there for too long, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
Yeah. So the whole build-up to this, I mean, we were speaking earlier on, it's not just Christina going out, doing her bit, it's the whole build-up behind you, it's the whole team behind you. Tell us about how you trained for this. I mean, at some occasions you were doing 20-plus hours a week in training, your full-time job, 20 hours training, is quite a lot, but you had a great support.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. And like I said, it's not an individual sport there with cycling. I have a support team there of four of my friends from Stirling Bike Club, and then my brother actually came along on the support trip for that as well. But over the length of time, so we've had, there was a year in the planning, so it's, what I like to say is that I had the easy part of basically just going out to train to ride my bike, but it's all the logistics behind that, you know, from getting all the hotels organised from Land's End and John O'Groats when we finished, getting the vehicles, the transports, organising that, trying to get sponsorship as well, between all that and all the kit. So, like, the team have been fantastic. They've just been instrumental in it. And, you know, it is, it's not something that you can do yourself with that. And with it was a Road Records Association attempt there. So we have to organise to get officials and timekeepers from them as well. And they had to come in each, and to come in each car with us as well. So that was obviously trying to get the communication between them as well. So it really was a year in the making.
Did, at any point, did anyone say, why the heck are you doing this? Or did you ever think it?
I kind of got that on a daily basis.
Oh,
people would just look at me and go, I wouldn't even drive that. Why would you even want to cycle it? But you know what? It's something, because I've done the 24-hour TT 2 years running, and like I said, there I got the distance I had wanted to do. And then within that kind of cycling community, this is probably the next best or the next biggest thing, kind of challenge-wise. So in my head, I'm kind of thinking, well, it's quite similar to just a 24. It's two 24s and a wee bit more. But it was, you know, just chatting.
Doesn't sound much when you say it like that, does it?
I mean, if you say it quickly.
When you say it quickly, it doesn't sound like much at all. Oh, yeah. Dear. I mean, I read a quote you gave for the Stornoway Gazette. You're saying, cycling along the A9 in the dead of night, climbing the Drumochter Pass was a challenging time that could have finished my attempt. Seeing a sign saying Inverness 100 miles, knowing I was pedalling uphill and feeling like I was hardly moving, then getting so cold, everything became a hard task. I'm actually even amazed that you can remember how you were feeling at where you were. I mean, it's just crazy that you think you've gone all that distance and you're still clocking up how you feel and what you can do and how you can still continue on.
It was bizarre, and looking back now, you know, it's 3 weeks later, like actually 3 weeks today, I was coming into Perth and getting ready to start. At that point there, I was actually thinking of that there, you know, a lovely evening tonight. And I'd quite like to be back on my bike there just now. You had all Australian Bike Club were at the roundabout there cheering me on, and it was so lovely. It was just really, really nice.
I think for your whole journey, you had great support.
It did. It was amazing. The whole length of the country, even in England as well, people had just read about it or knew about it. It was just coming out to the other side and helping us, and obviously offering support to the support team as well.
That's really nice.
But little did I know, after waving off my friends at Stirling Bike Club when they were cheering what was ahead of me going up the A9. I mean, I've driven that road many, many
times.
It's
bad enough, isn't it, to drive that road?
It is.
Crazy at times.
And there's roadworks on it as well just now. So, and it was about 9 o'clock at night I was heading up there, and I knew that I was going to be on there for 5 or 6 hours. And it's completely obviously different driving up or driving, cycling in the dark and not knowing when you're actually going up a hill when you couldn't see. And you're thinking, well, why am I going so slow? Have I lost all the power? Have I, you know, can I not go any harder? Or am I trying? Or, and all these things are going through your mind. And then it did, the temperature dropped so much, it got down to 6 degrees. And at that point there, you know, you're kind of thinking that you're still seeing the signposts in Inverness, 60 miles. Mm. And you think, like, this is like 60 miles, it's just never ending.
How do you keep yourself motivated at that point?
Knowing at that point that I had people in the vans and the cars behind me willing me on, encouraging me on, knowing that they've been with me the whole time, that I had to keep going for them, that, you know, we've all worked so hard together. I mean, at points here I thought the easiest thing is just to get off the bike and get into the car. Uh-huh. It's going to be warm, the pain will be over. But I thought, if I did that, yeah, I'd be regretting it. You know, I couldn't let them down. I just had to just keep going. And in my head, I had to just keep going, no matter how slowly that I was going, that I was just keep pedalling, just keep the wheels turning.
And Excuse me for being silly asking questions, but this is all in the one stretch of time. There's no stopping for a night. A nice wee bed and a bath and maybe a glass of red.
That would have been nice, like yeah. No, unfortunately not. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I had prepared for, and that's in my head because, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be hard. I knew it wasn't going to be pretty. There's going to be challenging times. It's going to be tough.
How do you prepare for no sleep? I mean, you can prepare your body for cycling, swimming, whatever, but how do you prepare for having no sleep?
You can't, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that was the hardest thing. That was the worrying part for me, is not knowing how my body's going to react to it. I've done 24 hours, I've done 27 hours without sleep, and I know how I react from that. But over the course of it, because when you stop, the clock doesn't stop. The clock's ticking on, so you have to adjust your pace there.
Uh-huh.
So it's basically from... I had 20 minutes sleep throughout the whole day, and then it's sleep deprivation.
It does so much too, but at what point did you realise that you may not break the record, and how did you deal with that?
After going up through over the Keswick Bridge, knowing that I would have to maintain a speed of 16 miles an hour, and knowing I had Helmsdale and Beddledale Brace, which I'm sure everyone knows how hilly that is, they are realising that the extent of that, and I wouldn't be able to hold that pace. But knowing that I was so close that I had to finish, I had to just keep going there anyway. I couldn't just come off my bike and just get back in the van at that point.
I can't believe it, but we've run out of time. And there's so much more to talk about, so hopefully at some point you can come back with your next adventure. It would be lovely. But really, really, thank you very much for joining me tonight. You've got a song to play us out with?
I do, yeah. It's Running Free by Iron Maiden.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.